Okay, we'll get started again. So, we've talked very abstractly about the way in which networks deliver data, and we've talked a bit more concretely about how a network can be designed to deliver that data. So issues like resource sharing, switching, etc. Now, generally, when we think of networks, we think of them as being arranged in a very specific way, what's called a layered architecture. Now, one thing to, again, keep in the back of your mind when we talk about layered architectures is that this refers to data networks. Telephony networks, circuit switch networks are different. Again, remember you set up the circuit and then it just provides a resource pipe. The layering does not apply there. Now, sometimes we'll see in telephony networks, layering is used to discuss the initial allocation of resources and the initial setting up of that connection. But what we have in mind here are packet switched networks. Okay. And so what the layer provides us with is a way of arranging a quite complex system into manageable components. And so again, if you think about what the job of the network is, we've talked about, well, you have to get bits point to point, you have to get bits through multiple hops. May or may not provide an end-to-end connection. And so what we need is mechanisms within the network to allow us to deal with all of these tasks. And as it happens, the way it's best to deal with these tasks, or a good way to, an attractive way to deal with these tasks, sort of sequentially, one after the other, from sort of the most basic, and from point to point, upwards through this stack. So, layering can represent the explicit structure of the network, so explicitly the components and how they interact with each other. And it can also be used as a model for discussion of networks. And again, it allows us to arrange the networks into a modular fashion that we can maintain and update more easily. Now, there are inefficiencies in layered systems. Potentially, error correction is happening at first, as an example, at a number of layers. And so that will have some impact on the quality of service again. And when these things were started, it was not an issue. Now, as quality service requirements
become more prominent, there is some discussion of layering does introduce some problems. Okay. So again, our canonical network architecture is represented by the TCP/IP protocol stack. And this stack has 5 layers. So again, starting at the bottom, we've got a physical layer, which is just how do you get bits from point A to point B. A link layer, so how do you make those bits represent, you know, sort of a specific connection. A network layer, as you're going over a series of links, how do you get from point A to point Z. A transport layer, which offers you a sort of not just physical connectivity from point A to point Z, but process-to-process connectivity, a process running on point A to a process running on point Z. Okay, and sitting on top of that, applications. And, you know, with some classic specified applications like mail, HTTP, file transfer, etc. And so the way TCP/IP works is that you have collections of protocols and implementations at the various levels, with, again, an emphasis on the network and transport layers, with the network layer being governed by IP, and specifically IP addressing. And the transport layer being governed by and large by the TCP and UDP, providing a reliable in order or non-reliable connection, such a connection oriented service and a connectionless service. Okay. So basically, again, what you have is you've got this bundle of protocols, which are defined sort of at the interface, or the interfaces are well defined. So you, again, they'll provide a service, and you know any layer knows what you're where it's getting from adjacent layers. Developed slightly after TCP/IP is the OSI reference model, the classic 7-layer model, which if you've had any networks course, you've seen this model. Okay. And we see here, again, 7 layers. The first 4 roughly correspond to the TCP/IP layers. There's a bit of functionality that moves around depending on which model you're in, but it's roughly the same things for our purposes, certainly, you know, the same functionality with layers. And then you see the application layer being split into 3 portions, application sitting on top, and then these 2 extra layers, presentation and session. Presentation allowed applications to interpret the meaning of data, so they do things like encryption, compression, etc. And synchronization allowed for, again, sort of enhanced maintenance of sessions. Okay. Now, the main excuse for these 2 additional layers is that this model was proposed by the telephony industry, which is still very much focused on connections. Arguably, potentially maybe they were right about the presentation. One thing that would be in there would be security, which again, everybody knows gets fairly short shrift, sort of within the traditional internet. Okay. Nevertheless, nobody's ever really done the whole pile with this in terms of implementation. Okay. So we have TCP/IP as an existing dominant architecture, and then OSI as a reference model. Okay. And so one of the reasons for the continued persistence of the OSI model is its level of abstraction. Okay, so TCP/IP was essentially just go and implement a bunch of stuff. OSI was more about sort of defining the functionality. So defining services clearly, defining interfaces clearly, and then after that, you can define your protocols. Okay. Now, typically, again, when discussing networks, the OSI layering is the common language. So if you're saying layer 3, you're talking about the network layer, physical layer, layer 2, link layer, etc. Okay. So what concepts did the OSI model make explicit? Well, two important ones. The first one was the concept of virtual versus actual communications. And so peer entities, so entities on distributed machines running a certain layer protocol, execute what are called distributed scripts. So the data they have is meant for each other. Okay. So if you're, if you for instance have the network layer, you have addressing, and the IP address is meant for the network layer alone, and it's communicated along from layer to layer to layer as you move through the network. Okay. So that's the virtual communication that goes on. Actual communication occurs up and down these stacks, except at the physical layer where you do have actual physical transmission of data. Okay. And so the
mathematical, we need to lay a layer of the seven process, the seven layers.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, seven layers or the TCP/IP, the four layers of the TCP, you know, however you've implemented it, you'll have a number of layers, and the data will move down those layers, over, up and down, over, up and down, over, up at the end.
Okay.
Okay. So we'll see an example of that in just a minute. Okay. And so setting it out like that allows for a number of benefits. First, we can think about the interfaces between the layers with a goal of minimizing the amount of information that has to be passed between layers. And obviously, sort of any divvying up of tasks allows you to spend, as long as you have interfaces defining what the inputs and outputs are, you can implement, then be feel free to implement in any way you wish, as long as, again, you provide the proper functionality and the input and output. And so this has been quite streamlined in our layered architectures, leading to the idea of data encapsulation. And what this means is that a layer adds some control information to the data it receives, and then passes this whole bundle down to the next layer, which treats all of that as data and adds its own control information. So essentially, the various layers aren't worrying about the actual content of the data they're being sent. They just treat it as data that they need to process and sort of send on to the next layer. So there's no need between adjacent layers to look for meaning within the bits. So that's a very important sort of simplification. Okay. So we have an example here. Our sender wants to send some sort of message to some remote location. Excuse me. And so we have our TCP/IP stack here. And the data will travel down this stack until it gets down to the physical layer. At the physical layer, it will physically travel to the next node, the remote location. And then at the intermediate nodes, you have an amount of processing done. So you go at least a certain way up the stack again in order to determine how to handle the data. Okay. And those options. In this case, we don't have any routing decisions to make, so we go up to the link layer to establish the connection, but we don't go any further. We move on again. Here we have a router, so we have to make a decision which physical link we're going to go on next. So we, again, the data arrives at the physical layer. We go up to the network layer, back down, decide where to go next, go down through all the layers. And what down through means is, again, adding appropriate control information, send it to the finally gets to the destination, goes up through the layers. All of the control information is interpreted by the appropriate layer. So the link layer looks at the header, the link header. The network layer looks at the network header, the transport layer looks at the transport header, and then finally all that's unwrapped and the message is delivered to the application. So, again, we see everything here. We see the data physically moving, actually moving through the various layers, being processed by the various layers. The processing is done by data encapsulation. So we take the data and we just add control information in the form of a header. Then all of that goes down to the next layer. The next layer refers to the whole, views the whole bundle as merely data, doesn't even look what it means, just adds its own information. Goes down the link layer again adds its own information, and the physical layer does the same, and we again go through that process a number of times before reaching the destination. Okay, so when we will be considering various layers of network architectures in the context of wireless networks. Again, one thing to keep in mind is sort of when we're looking at cellular networks, they come from telephony networks, so that what we're studying now might not apply or might only apply in part. I'll flag that. But certainly certain issues are common no matter what. So the physical layer, again, is concerned with the physical transmission of bits. And again, this is pretty important in the wireless context. And so we'll spend a reasonable amount of time looking at the physical characteristics of radio transmission of data. And again, looking at how we can optimize various quantities. Okay, the data link layer is responsible for point-to-point packet transmissions, and we now just don't have this random collection of bits. We want to shake it up and give it some meaning, meaning of a packet. And typically, we divide that up into two functions. We have the logic link control layer, which is concerned with correct transmission of the packets and sort of actually implementing a link. And then we have medium access control, which has to do with how the medium is shared in the transmission of the data. And so, again, this is an important issue for radios. We have so much frequency spectrum available, and how do you allocate that spectrum so one signal's not interfering with another? Okay. Now, this layer comes to the fore in the discussion of typically of local area networks. And so you'll see a good bit of it when you look at the IEEE 802 family, and we'll be looking at a number of 802s, 802.11, which is wireless LAN, 802.16, WiMAX, 802.15, which is sort of how it corresponds to Bluetooth. But again, we'll have a good look at sort of medium access control in that context. Medium access control is also very important, or I should say resource allocation is also a very big deal for these networks, even in circuit switch networks. So in the context of cellular systems, we'll also look at sort of how do you arrange radio access for cellular systems. Okay, so the network layer is responsible for end-to-end packet transmission, and again, one of the big functions of that is routing. So how do you get choose a path from point A to point B? We're not going to touch on that in any great depth in this module. You should be aware that there is a mobile version of IP, and the primary goal of that is to allow devices moving from one network to another to maintain their same IP address. So how do you do that? It's one thing if you're plugged into the wall, keeping your same an IP address. If you're moving from sort of jurisdiction to jurisdiction, how do you maintain your locatability? But I mentioned that for completeness, that there are issues within the wireless and mobile context, but we don't really deal with them. Okay, again, the transport layer is responsible for our end-to-end connectivity, not between machines, but between processes. And the two basic layers are TCP and UDP, providing either a connection-oriented or a connectionless service. They do play a role in quality of service in general, and can be, and that role can be sort of magnified in wireless networks because of, again, just general quality of service issues for wireless networks. But we're not, again, going to examine the specifics of how it comes into play. Okay. And again, the application layer is distributed end-to-end applications. You got the fourth year just got out of 3.2.1 last year. And again, we discussed a lot about how applications interacted with networks. And again, the primary issue is quality of service for applications. What do the applications require, and what do the networks provide? And so within a good few of the wireless network protocols, somewhere in the stack that we look at, there will be some quality of service provision built into the network specifications, or the protocol specifications. So as we go along, for various different types of networks, we will point out sort of how quality of service is catered for within the networks. Okay. So the layered architecture is applicable for wireless networks, again, depending on type. Cellular networks had their origins in circuit switch networks. So again, for those sorts of networks, the applicability is a bit limited, although even within those, for control functions, layering is often discussed. Okay. So for setting up your channels and your resource allocation, there frequently have layered architectures to do that, but not the classic OSI model. Okay. Wireless LANs are, again, run at layer two, so that's there, and medium access control is imported for them, so we will be looking at medium access control in various flavors. And ad hoc networks run at layer three, and Prishikesh will give you one lecture on ad hoc networks as well, so you'll get a bit of it there. Okay. And so performance concerns have also led to proposals of cross-layer protocols, and there are some protocols that try to take information from various layers of the stack and optimize delivery based on those. Okay, so you can do this module, whether that's rang any bells with you or not. However, I am sort of assuming that you have some picture of networks like that in your head. So there will be times you know, I say, oh, that's layer three or layer two, or you know, we talk about layers. And so it's more comfortable for you if you have some clue what that means. Okay. So there's a number of good references which describe this all quite nicely and are quite accessible. I always think Solomon's is quite readable. Tannenbaum's one of the classics. Kuros and Ross is the one that's used in 3-2-1. But they'll all tell you basically the same story. Okay. And you know, so if you're not happy with networks, have a look at one of these. Okay. So what are we going to do in this module? Basically, again, just examine various flavors of wireless networks to see how well or they can provide for this new proliferation of services and data types. Okay. And if anybody who has an iPhone will say, yeah, we can do it pretty well. But what we want to do is examine sort of what's going into getting to that point, getting to the point where you can cater for this sort of service. Okay. Very abstractly, what's the difference between wired and wireless? Well, wires. I'm supposed to laugh. So, first issue with wireless is you can get rid of the wires, and so that's very much a physical layer issue. You get rid of the wires. How else do you get the data from point A to point B? Well, a radio signal, and you know, without some look at sort of how that happens. Okay. Now, what's probably more fun is once you've gotten rid of the wires, you have mobility. You aren't stuck to a cord in the wall. So, mobility offers you know, a significant difference for the user in sort of usage to a wired system. Again, for a wired system, you plug into your point in the wall, and that's it. That's how you connect to the network. If you're mobile, then as you move from one connection to going out of the range of that connection, having to pick up a new connection. And so you have a number of issues to do with that, having to do with what sort of coverage does your wireless network provide you? It does it have a range? If you're in a wireless land, the answer is yes. If you're dealing with the cellular network, the answer is still yes, but it's probably, you know, if it's a very large range, okay, and certainly as you're walking along, you're still going through within range. As you're driving across the country, you're probably still in range. Okay. And so, you get this question about, well, how do you know where the user is? How do you keep them connected? How do you connect them to the network? Sort of how do you change from access point to access point in a smooth way so the user doesn't necessarily lose connectivity. And so we'll look at this in the context then of cellular networks and how they've evolved and do that. Okay. So, like wired networks, wireless networks were again developed for specific purposes. Your cellular network arose from the telephony world, trying to provide voice connectivity. Local area networks arose from the networking world. And again, they initially started out tailored to specific applications. Like within the wired world, those have been moving to a sort of more unified approach. There are additional challenges within the wireless world in terms of capacity and quality of service. Okay. So, what issues arise? Well, the devices themselves can be have challenges. Not that we're going to deal with it in any great detail, but users want features, functionality, and they also want to be able to carry the thing, so batteries become an issue, and quality of service is an issue. Okay. The resource allocation problem is not just a technical problem, but it's a regulatory problem as well. There is only so much spectrum. You can only fit so many different channels into any physical area. Unlike in the wired network, you need more capacity. You put in another optical cable. There's costs to it, but it can be done. You can't add spectrum. You can try and use it more efficiently. You can try and use different ranges, but there is, in the end, only so much. Therefore, it is regulated. Okay. And in addition to regulation, there is an expense associated potentially with using it. In Europe, anyway, 3G rollout was hampered a good deal by the cost of the 3G licenses. Okay, so the government's assumption is that made them too expensive, and it hampered the progression of the technology. Okay. Oops. Yeah, this. Again, there's issues of performance. It's harder to get good performance out of a radio signal. It's not impossible, but it's harder. And there's some limited, more limitations on bandwidth and sort of, in general, higher error rates and potentially more fluctuation in that. Security has additional dimensions to it. Again, once something's out on this shared medium of a radio wave, anybody can receive it, not just your intended person. So you have to be more aware of security issues. Additionally, jamming is also possible. So not only can they receive it, but they can block it. Okay, so coverage is an issue. There's fixed range for radio signals, which, again, that's not so different from wired signals. But if you have this range and immediately next door, or this area immediately next door, you try to use the same frequency jam, frequency ranges, you're going to get interference. So, there's an issue that that limits the capacity in a specific area even more. And as we said, there's also mobility. Okay. So, how are wireless networks designed? Well, the data networks adhere to essentially the same layered architecture as for wired networks. There are, again, additional performance problems within wireless networks that make the inefficiencies of layered models sort of more problematic. And so, again, cross-layer standards such as 802.25 have been proposed. Okay. So, again, some of the wireless networks have arisen from the telephony side of the house, particularly, for instance, GSM is fairly connection oriented. So they've, based on the sort of bandwidth conservation requirements, the channels have been compressed, but it's still sort of a connection-oriented circuit switch technology. Okay. And so there are parallels in the physical transmission and the resource allocation, but it's not using the classic OSI model. So we'll examine again a number of systems. The first one we'll have a look at is the cellular telephony system, and we'll look at a number of aspects. So one is how do we provide sort of coverage over a large area, and again, we'll look at the evolution where we started with a circuit switch system and providing sort of resource reservations and connectivity and see where it's evolved from there. Okay. Another example of wireless networks that we'll look at is the local wireless LANs. And again, the idea here was just to replace all the cabling that you have for a wired LAN. And so the approaches are relatively similar. It does allow for a bit of mobility, not sort of the mobility that you would have for a cellular network. But you have to, again, account for the sort of the radio transmission. We'll see that that does introduce a few variations on what and how things are handled. Okay, we'll look at broadband access, and in particular the WiMAX standard. And so, again, this was meant to be a high capacity point-to-point link. Okay. And again, the medium access control is key within the 802.16 standard, as well as, again, for all of these, it's also very physical the physical transmission is important as well. And so again, it was initially intended to be point-to-point link, but it has also made its way into the cellular standards, the 3G and 4G standards, versions of WiMAX, again, for the access, the radio access link. And then we'll probably wrap up the anyway, we'll also sort of mention a number of other radio access networks, low cost, no power, low range networks. Probably the most well known of this would be Bluetooth, again, which is one of the primary functions, is just cable replacement and sort of basic data transfer over small distances. We'll look at ad hoc networks. Again, Hrishikesh will give you one talk on ad hoc networks. So again, they cover sort of a multitude of SINs and a multitude of application areas. And so here's mobile ad hoc networks, so just everything's going in every direction, sensor networks, mesh networks, which have more of an architecture associated with them, vehicular networks. So typically these are networks with a lot less structure to them than the ones we've mentioned previously, and often they're sort of designed for very specific applications. One of the big differences again comes into play is the idea of routing and again looking at network layer issues for wireless networks. And again, this is complicated because they can be fairly unstructured. Okay, and then there's a whole range of other things which would come into the sense, into the sort of fold of wireless systems in the sense that they all don't have wires, but are sort of outside the scope of this module. Okay. So, again, what we'll try to do as the course moves on is give you sort of an overview of what are the big issues to do with these networks, with examples of sort of networks where that issue is particularly well addressed, or at least addressed. Okay, so I think these guys have it. One thing that should come out of sort of the previous laundry list of various types of networks is that we've got a lot of protocols, different types of networks, again, all trying to share this radio spectrum, and actually ideally wanting to have a fairly narrow, within a fairly narrow band of this radio spectrum. So again, regulation comes into play in trying to share out the spectrum sort of equitably amongst a number of different applications. Okay. And so there are regulatory agencies who regulate the spectrum. I mean, not all of the spectrum, there are licensed portions and unlicensed portions, but they specify sort of who has use of the various ranges. In Ireland, Comtech would do it, and in the US, the FCC does it. There is some attempt, sort of internationally, to negotiate reasonable standards, but it's getting there, but the sort of historically, again, different bands got allocated in different countries, which made compatibility across countries somewhat difficult. Okay. So, again, different frequencies get allocated to different standards, and the standards, the different the technologies that have to make use of that frequency as best they can. And what we'll see is, again, various technologies are employed. Time division multiple access, frequency division multiple access, orthogonal frequency division, multiplexing, MIMO, multiple input, multiple output techniques. So a number of different technologies are used with the goal of essentially squeezing the most out of the spectrum as possible. And we will go through pretty much all of these technologies as we go through the module as well. And we'll see sort of what the benefits and drawbacks of each is. Okay, so that's it. Starting next Monday, we'll start with things that are genuinely wireless, not just networks. We'll start at the lowest level, talking about radio transmission and radio transmission systems, and what do we need just to send our signals over the airwaves. When we've got a handle on that, we'll look fairly abstractly at the design of cellular systems and essentially how do you allocate frequencies sort of to cover large ranges, how do you arrange access points, etc. We'll do a little bit of analysis about capacity, etc. We'll then look sort of at more at the standards involved in cellular networks. So how the technology has evolved from transmitting analog voice signals in 1G to transmitting IP packets at very high data rates in 4G, and how have we gotten from point A to point B, and sort of what are the various technologies that are needed to do that. Okay, and then again, we'll have a look at other networks which exemplify different issues within wireless networks. And at some point, sort of in the middle of the module, we'll talk about the simulation tool we're going to use, and we're going to give you an introduction to that, and see how it can be used for modeling of wireless networks. And then your assignment, again, will be based on this simulation tool. Okay, so that's it for today. Again, next Monday we'll sort of roll up our sleeves and get into some of the more technical details.